Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We're going to be looking at a statement that was posted on the LDS.org website in December of 2013, a statement titled Plural Marriage and Families in Early Utah. Now, you would think, Eric, that there's not a whole lot of new things that the Mormon Church could come out and say on the subject of marriage or plural marriage. But this statement does bring out some things that probably many Latter-day Saints are completely unaware of. But at the same time, it doesn't tend to give a lot of details in some of these areas either. And so that's why we thought it would be kind of fun to go through this thing and to examine what the church wants you to believe regarding, as the topic says, plural marriage and families in early Utah.
Well, it starts off, the Bible and the Book of Mormon teach that the marriage of one man to one woman is God's standard, except at specific periods when he has declared otherwise.
Now, let's stop there. We haven't even gotten two lines here, and already there's some question marks that I'm raising here on this subject. When it says that marriage of one man to one woman is God's standard, except at specific periods when he has declared otherwise, can you recall specific periods where God declared monogamy to not be the norm?
In the Bible?
In the Bible.
No, and that's the thing. Polygamy did take place.
There's no doubt about that.
We have Abraham, we have Jacob, and David, and Solomon as some of the more popular polygamists out there. And yet, if you notice, it's an argument from silence to say that God commanded that.
What you mean by that, an argument from silence, of course, is that there is no place where the Bible comes out and says you need to practice polygamy for this particular situation. He tolerated it, I guess would be a good way of putting it.
And as we've said in earlier broadcasts, whenever we talk about this issue, no good ever came out of polygamy. Name me one good polygamous situation where you say, oh, that really worked out well. It certainly didn't work out for Solomon after his 1,000 women were dividing his heart and loyalties.
Well, we probably won't get into it certainly in this broadcast, but when you talk about no good thing ever came out of polygamy, this statement actually verifies that when it talks about the hardship that those who practice polygamy within the context of Mormonism, the difficulty that they had, and it was not a pretty picture. And if this is what God wanted for his people, boy, it came along with a lot of heartache and a lot of drudgery.
And it says the Bible and the Book of Mormon. I mean, we only have one reference in the Book of Mormon, Jacob chapter 2, that even deals with that issue as well.
And it talks about that in this statement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there's not a whole bunch of evidence to support that first sentence of this essay that they have.
It kind of comes off at the very beginning as being a bit defensive. Because the Mormons know that they've taken a lot of criticism over the subject of polygamy over the years for a number of different reasons, but they've always been in the crosshairs when it comes to the subject. So it actually kind of starts off a little bit defensive,
mm-hmm,
and trying to paint a positive picture as to somehow give reasons, good, valid reasons maybe, that this is why the Mormon Church practices it. But as we're going to see, it doesn't really work. The next paragraph.
It says this, in accordance with the revelation of Joseph Smith, the practice of plural marriage, the marriage of one man to two or more women, was instituted among the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the early 1840s. Thereafter, for more than half a century, plural marriage was practiced by some Latter-day Saints. Only the church president held the keys authorizing the performance of new plural marriages. In 1890, the Lord inspired Church President Wilford Woodruff to issue a statement that led to the end of the practice of plural marriage in the Church. In this statement, known as the Manifesto, President Woodruff declared his intention to abide by U.S. law forbidding plural marriage and to use his influence to convince members of the Church to do likewise.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning of that second paragraph. In accordance with a revelation to Joseph Smith, the practice of plural marriage, The marriage of one man to two or more women was instituted among members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the early 1840s. And then it goes on to talk about thereafter for more than half a century.
Yes.
So what does this give us the date? If this took place in the 1840s when it was being practiced among members.
Well, a half a century is 50 years, and so more than half a century would be 51 or more. So you add that up to the early 1840s, it's going to go past the 1890 manifesto date.
And the date of the manifesto, 1890, is supposed to be the cutoff period. After 1890, this is when the church leadership promised that they would no longer practice polygamy. They would not have any more plural marriages. And so they were promising the federal government that they're not going to do it. And this is kind of showing that it did go past 1890, and the statement's going to admit this.
And I think we need to point out that revelation, quote unquote, to Joseph Smith, we don't believe that was really a revelation, but that's still found in LDS scripture today. That's D&C, Doctrine and Covenants, section 132. Still held to by Latter-day Saints, but when they talk about the celestial marriage, they refer to that as monogamy, where back in those days, before 1890, that was referring to plural marriages.
This statement I find interesting, though. It says, only the church president held keys authorizing the performance of new plural marriages. I find that fascinating because John D. Lee, who was the only man who was executed for the Mountain Meadows Massacre that took place in 1857, September 11th, 1857, the Mountain Meadows Massacre takes place. We know now from history that Brigham Young pretty much knew all the details about the Mountain Meadows Massacre not long after it happened. Yet we also know that Brigham Young himself solemnized the marriage, the plural marriage, of John D. Lee to Emma Batchelor in, what, January of 1858.
Yeah, she was better known as Emma Lee French. She actually worked for 7 years as an indentured servant to pay for her trip from England, and she meets John D. Lee, and so Brigham Young presided at the marriage on January 7th, 1858.
If I remember correctly, he had his own endowment room, a house somewhere, and he performed it there. The reason I bring this up, folks, is because for years, the Mormon Church painted this picture of Brigham Young as like being in mourning over what took place at the Mountain Meadows, that he was just feeling so bad for what took place on all those immigrants that were killed there by the hands of Mormons. But yet, he knows what happened, and he knows that John D. Lee is a part of this. He knows that Mormons are involved in it. And so what does he do? He rewards, and I have to use that word purposely, he's rewarding John D. Lee about, what, 4 months later?
Yes.
Giving him in marriage to Emma Batchelor. So, obviously, I can't think that Brigham Young thought that what John D. Lee at the Mountain Meadows was something that was bad and worthy of punishment. Instead, to Brigham Young, it looks like it was something worthy of reward.
And it's interesting. It's a point I never even knew until you brought that up today. It's not until 1870, 12 years later, that the church excommunicates John D. Lee, and then he's executed in 1877. And so for all these years, he remains in the church with, he had more than a dozen wives. He had over 50 children. And here's one of the weddings that takes place just a few months after, supposedly, where he was responsible for the destruction of the people at Mountain Meadows.
And I know this is kind of a distraction from our topic for today, but even though he's excommunicated, he's reinstated, I believe, in the 1960s. He's once again reinstated in the Mormon Church. So John D. Lee is, boy, he's really a religious and political football in the Mormon Church. He's being kicked all over the place. And so ultimately, I guess you could say that John D. Lee is now a Mormon in good standing, technically, according to their belief system. So anyway, when we look at this, in 1890, the Lord inspired Church President Wilford Woodruff to issue a statement that led to the end of the practice of plural marriage in the church. In this statement, known as the Manifesto, Woodruff declared his intention to abide by U.S. law forbidding plural marriage and to use his influence to convince members of the church to do likewise. You know what's interesting about this, Eric? It doesn't say anywhere in here that there was a revelation to end it.
Yeah.
It was a statement. And a lot of people believe that the manifesto was really nothing more than a press release. It doesn't have the thus saith the Lord type of feeling to it. It's a statement. Now, isn't it interesting that they can use a statement to end the practice of what is known as a doctrine, but when it comes to the black issue, they have to have a revelation to undo what now is being described as nothing but folklore. I just find that fascinating.
And we have to understand that the purpose of this was that they could become a state because the U.S. government was certainly breathing hard on the Mormon officials, and they would have taken over, I think, and confiscated their property. But Brigham Young in Journal of Discourses, Volume 11, page 269, said this was never to be. He said, "I heard the revelation on polygamy, and I believed it with all my heart, and I know it is from God. I know that he revealed it from heaven. I know that it is true and understand the bearings of it and why it is. Do you think we shall ever be admitted as a state into the Union without denying the principle of polygamy? If we are not admitted until then, we shall never be admitted."
Well, not only Brigham Young, but what do you do with the statement by Wilford Woodruff?
Yeah,
Wilford Woodruff, the very man who signed the statement, the manifesto, what did he say prior to doing
that? He said this in Journal of Discourses, Volume 13, page 166, "If we were to do away with polygamy, it would only be one feather in the bird, one ordinance in the church and kingdom. Do away with that, then we must do away with prophets and apostles, with revelation and the gifts and graces of the gospel, and finally give up our religion altogether and turn sectarians and do as the world does, then all would be right. We just can't do that, for God has commanded us to build up his kingdom and to bear our testimony to the nations of the earth, and we are going to do it, come life or come death. He has told us to do this, and we shall obey him in days to come as we have in days past." Now, he says that in 1869, but then in 1890, he's talking differently.
There's no doubt that when the government, and there was a lot of rumblings that the government was going to come in and crack down on plural marriage. There was a lot of bravado going on in Utah that they were never going to give this up. God was going to protect them. And that certainly wasn't to be. And naturally, in the manifesto of 1890, Wilford Woodruff has to succumb to the pressures of the federal government. Otherwise, he knew there was going to be some serious ramifications involved.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org. Have you considered visiting the Holy Land? Well, in February 2015, Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson are hosting a trip to Israel with the option to visit the seven churches of Revelation in Turkey. During our 11-day trip to Israel, former Utah pastor Joel Kramer will take us on a day to see important biblical sites where very few people go. We'll also have a chance to swim in the Dead Sea, get baptized in the Jordan River, and hike through Hezekiah's Tunnel. To find out more, visit MRM.org and click on the Israel icon on the top right-hand corner of the page. Again, that's MRM.org.